Turning now to our reading of Margaret Cheney's Tesla, Man Out of Time. And as we say every week, as we read about Nikola Tesla's life after returning from Colorado in 1900, we should consider what it would mean for the power guys of his time, folks like J.P. Morgan and the heads of state Nikola appealed to for support as World War I loomed. Support in scaling up his particle beam, EMF, weapon in order to put a fast end to conflict through its awe-inspiring, if awful, demonstration of unassailable force. What would go through the minds of those who lust for power untouchable to learn of Nikola's invention? Think of what the current versions today would do, and you know what they did. Continuing chapter 16, ridiculed, condemned, combated. As Nikola Tesla had just invented a method for the wireless transmission of electrical power, knowledge that will end necessity in the human story and, in conjunction with it, a weapon that ends war because it is definitive and so thought-provoking that it unites the people globally, he was not much interested in marketing therapeutic oscillators, we learned last week. Instead, he issued two handsome brochures, one describing the world system of communication and another expensively printed on vellum that announced his entry into the field of consulting engineering. The main work crew, and we're talking about Ed Wardenclyffe, his laboratory on Long Island. The main work crew were kept busy fabricating and assembling novel devices, blowing glass vacuum tubes, and doing the routine work of firing up the steam generator. The latter job was spasmodic. By mid-July of 1903, the paying of coal bills had become a problem. Periodically, the crew was laid off. When coal for the Wardenclyffe generator could be afforded, the inventor wired Scherf to stoke up for a weekend of tests and took a train to Long Island. "The troubles and dangers are at their height," he wrote Scherf on one occasion. "Coal problem still awaits solution. The Wardenclyffe specters are hounding me day and night. When will it end?" Scherf, now moonlighting as a bookkeeper for other firms, lent small sums of money when he could. Dorothy F. Skerritt, who was his secretary for many years, later verified a report that he probably lent the inventor a total of $40,000 over the years. "Tesla seemed to have Mr. Scherf hypnotized," she observed. In an earlier and better time, the inventor told her he had been able to get money from Morgan just by asking for it. On one occasion, the financier signed a blank check and told Tesla to fill in what he needed. Tesla said that the amount was $30,000. But now Morgan's disenchantment, or pretense of it, I would say, with Wardenclyffe was final. Tesla, equally persuasive and beseeching, then angry, accusing, and bitter. They pursued the banker by special messenger everywhere, even to the pier as he embarked on yet another grand tour of the continent. Inevitably, rumors spread that Morgan had acquired Tesla's radio patents just to prevent their development, but there was no proof. When bad news whispered along Wall Street, it gained strength from itself. Word that Morgan was dropping out of the world system venture, he'd actually been only a lender, convinced other potential backers that it must be a soap bubble. Tesla knew such rumors were killing him, but there was little he could do except live each day trying to dodge bill collectors, pleading with other bankers and rich acquaintances, working out scientific problems of the project, seeking to market other inventions, and bidding for consultancies. And I have to comment here, which will conclude this reading, this story of the screwing of Nikola is in so many ways instructive about the strategies and tactics of power. And while their use of the money lever to manipulate and hurt him stands out, shows how it is used to sink particular individuals that power wants to control, destroy, or bury. Because the target is Nikola Tesla, it exposes power's mindset, its larger agenda, in showing us the kind of world that it wants to sculpt. Public opinion, and here we see that the spreading of rumors did not even require the use of their on-staff journalists because of the rarefied circle in which they needed to circulate. Public opinion in this case matters not just because a particular individual, quote-unquote, needs to be discredited because he inconveniently could out or has the potential to out the duplicity of one of their number, but because this individual represents for an entirely different way of seeing and being in the world, represents for the opposite to the mindset of rule. And of course, they wanted his inventions for themselves. That goes without saying. Represents for the opposite of class, represents for, as Proudhon would say or would see, equality, for the unity of all humanity globally. It is this vision, the realization of which Nikola's inventions hand us on a platter they are trying to bury. The vision of a free future of united human beings. The same tactics were used against Prince and are still being used against Prince for the same reasons. Next week, we'll continue our reading of Chapter 16, Ridiculed, Condemned, Combated, in Margaret Cheney's Tesla, Man Out of Time.